From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
This Tuesday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parm, Neil McCready. We are going mobile today as the snow has affected things for the second straight business day that was open, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Obviously on Monday, Oxford schools and most of the town closed on Friday and now Tuesday because of winter weather currently outside my office window. The driveways and the roads are covered in snow. Still some flurries coming down, but no accumulation as of 8:05 a.m. on the actual yards. But either way, one more day of not much travel locally. Neil is back from Chicago. I'm back as well. And we're here with you with a podcast this morning. Also of note, we will have a Billy's Pecans soft verbal coming soon as well. Jacob Peeler joining Russell Johnson and myself for about 30 minutes of talk with Ole Miss's wide receivers coach, so be looking out for that later as well. And with the Oxford Exxon, they bring this podcast to you every single day, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Remember that they are the title sponsor of the annual FCA breakfast that is featuring Evan Engram. That's in late February. You can go ahead and start making your plans, getting your tickets for that event. Should be a good time there on the Ole Miss campus. Also, 49-cent bottomless refills, lunch specials, and everything else we tell you about with Blue Sky, Oxford Exxon, and Craddock Oil, including the Jamie Lynn Spears concert, the Hometown Sessions, coming to Macomb February 3rd. You can get those tickets at eventbrite.com. And again, as we do every single day, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. You call the number, you ask for Corey Clark, you tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, he sends you a quote. Within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. You get your quote. Really, at that point, it's up to you. You can shop it around if you'd like. Or you can do what so many other listeners of the podcast have done, and that's just let Corey and the people at Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great deal on a great vehicle, tremendous service after the sale, everything that you could possibly want in your automotive purchasing experience from Clark Ford and Amory, and we'll make it even better. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our network of podcasts, and it's $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
We'll discuss a little bit of Ole Miss news and then get into our very much contrasting weekends as Neil and his son Carson doing Cubs convention look like a really, really good time, and then me experiencing one of the worst sports moments of my life on Sunday. So we'll get to that here in a bit. The major Ole Miss news since the last time we have talked, or I guess the two bits. Number one, Ole Miss beats Florida in basketball on Saturday. Andy Kennedy getting a big home win. You can read about that at rebelgrove.com. And then on the other side of the spectrum, Bradley Del Pivido, Ole Miss linebackers coach, headed to Texas A&M, joining Jimbo Fisher with that job. We had reported that he had been in College Station, I guess, the night before it broke that he had taken the position, but it did not appear to catch anybody as a surprise. And another spot, Neil, for Matt Luke to fill on his staff here prior to National Signing Day.
Yeah, and perhaps another one coming. There's a lot of rumors about Jason Jones. I wrote about this in 10 Thoughts. This isn't a knock on Pivido or anybody else. I generally think this is a good thing. I didn't think the idea of Matt Luke walking in and inheriting Hugh Freeze's staff and just going carte blanche was the greatest idea in the world. I just think he needs to put his own stamp on it. This is a huge opportunity for Matt Luke. He needs to have his people. He needs to have people that believe in his philosophy. He needs to have people that believe in him. And sometimes it's best to have some of your own people, whoever those people might be. I guess that's what we'll find out here in the next few days. I would think they want to get, what's today, Tuesday? I would think you want to get a lot of staff stuff done here this week. You've got official visitors coming in this weekend, official visitors coming in the next weekend. I mean, you want to get that kind of stuff. You want to get your staff set. You don't want to have question marks when kids come in this late in the process.
Yeah, Ole Miss with two big recruiting weekends prior to at least the February version of National Signing Day. They signed 15 back in December 20th, as a matter of fact, one of those being a gray shirt and Isaiah Woolard, and then 14 others. They still got two commitments on the list that did not sign, but they've got about 8 or 9 spots here to fill the rest of the way prior to that February 7th date. So, yeah, Bradley Del Pivito headed to A&M. I think you make a good point. There's a chance there for that to be a good thing for Ole Miss. See what direction they go, see who they hire, see how they bring in, see what happens with Jason Jones. Also, a little news yesterday. At least of what I've heard from talking to some different people, I think it kind of got escalated more than it actually was. Hugh Freeze in Tuscaloosa yesterday interviewing with Nick Saban. By all accounts, that appears, Neil, to be more of an analyst-type situation on the table than an offensive coordinator situation.
Hugh Freeze is not going to be Nick Saban's offensive coordinator. I mean, it just makes no sense. It makes no sense. And I'm not making fun of anybody. I'm really not, but I'm just trying to be real here. I covered Hugh Freeze for 5 years. You did too. The guy that I covered is not going to be comfortable being on Nick Saban's sideline, having his ass chewed on national television, being completely cut away from talking to anyone, basically being hidden in a corner with the exception of a day or two during the year, completely under Nick Saban's thumb. That person that I covered for 5 years would not be comfortable with that. I mean, Hugh Freeze is on apparently trying to get back on the lecture circuit. He's going to speak with his wife at Liberty University in some deal. I mean, Nick Saban's not going to allow that. I just don't think that meshes. Now, if you tell me that Hugh Freeze is going to move into something similar to the Dan Werner role at Alabama, okay, I can see that, like you were saying just then. But people talking about him being the offensive coordinator there, they're only looking at that from a pure football standpoint, just football. They're completely disregarding the human element and the personality element that cannot be disregarded here. I mean, it Hugh Freeze, there is no sign at all, zero, that Hugh Freeze has any intention at all of becoming just a football coach. None.
No, it's never been the case, and I don't think it's the case now. I think the analyst thing would be a way to get back to work in a worst-case scenario for Hugh Freeze. He's been, I mean, this is no secret. He's been bored. He hadn't had a whole lot to do, and I think he's trying to find anything football-related to fill his time. And that at least would do that. I mean, Dan Werner's situation that he had in place was basically go to Tuscaloosa 3 or 4 days a week. He kept his residence in Oxford. He came back here pretty much for the weekends, and then would go back over and do it all over again. So, yeah, that would not shock me if that's the case.
Makes some sense. Yeah. That one makes some sense. Not a ton of sense, but some sense. The OC thing makes no sense.
By all indications, Nick Saban probably hiring from within for his OC job, according to people over there.
Yeah. I mean, that's just – Hugh Freeze did Clay Travis a favor, and Clay has become quite the advocate for Hugh Freeze. But, you know, you see the way that Saban has treated offensive coordinators in the past, at least publicly on game day. I don't see Hugh Freeze comfortable with that. I really don't. I don't – that doesn't look – and that's not a knock on Freeze. I wouldn't be comfortable with that either. And I mean, you know – Lane Kiffin took it for a couple of years, and Lane Kiffin's had fun with it ever since. Brian Daboll did not appear to be happy with it. I mean, that, and from talking to people who sort of are familiar with that program, Brian Daboll wanted out of there pretty quickly.
And found a really cushiony landing spot.
He did. I mean, look, the flip side is that working for Nick Saban
open is doors.
Quite the resume enhancer right now.
Yeah. I know I'm utterly shocked that that player who got into it with the coach on the sidelines decided to transfer, by the way. I'm stunned beyond belief this morning.
Yeah, I'm shocked that didn't work out.
You think Saban even took the time to, like, chew him out at some point? Or is that just everybody knows you're gone, so whatever. Go get on the bus, and we're just done dealing with you, period?
Oh, he probably got chewed a little bit, but it wasn't a passionate chewing.
The same way that somebody back for 2 years would have gotten.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
I don't know about you, and this is – I mean, I have the utmost – respect for what they've done, admiration for what they've done. They've done awe for what they've done. But Alabama fatigue is a strong thing right now.
In what way for you?
It's old.
It's boring.
And it's almost become mythological. You know, Saban is this. I mean, look, they recruit better than everybody else. They throw more money at it than anybody else. And they're tremendous at it. I don't mean it as a, but just it's the way it's portrayed by some people is almost magical, and it's not. It's just he's very, very good. He has an excellent staff. He has a machine going, and they go out and they recruit the very best players from all over the country. It's not a shock that they win, but there is a certain degree of fatigue to it.
And they were hellaciously lucky in this season.
Yes. This was not one of his better teams.
No, not.
And it got. It
College football
out.
Would have been better served for Georgia to win. Another new blood team, as much yes. as you can call Georgia that. Another team that wins, Saban losing a game. Because, you know, in sports in general, you kind of want dynasties built. Those are fun and those are great. But then as soon as it kind of gets built, you kind of need it to go into rubble and the new guy win a little bit too. I mean, the NFL's looking at that right now with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and the Patriots just winning again and again and again. I mean, I saw this graphic yesterday or day before. I'm assuming ESPN put it out. And it was like since 2001, 2, 3, something like that. And it showed the quarterbacks that have represented the AFC in the Super Bowl since that time period. And it's all these pictures of their faces. It's Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger, and then one Joe Flacco. And that was it. Since, I mean, in almost a decade and a half.
I have Patriot fatigue. I'll be honest. And we'll talk about the Saints thing in a minute. But with the Saints out, and normally I would watch both championship games from kickoff to final gun. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm planning to watch, but at the same time, if something comes up, I would be easily distracted. The NFL's never, and it has nothing to do with the take a knee stuff at all. The NFL, this particular playoff weekend coming up, has never been less appealing to me. I have really no interest at all.
I don't think I'm physically going to be able to watch. I don't think I'm going to watch another snap of football this year.
And your deal's different because yeah. you're so attached to one team and the way that game unfolded.
Yeah, I don't think me, I'm going mean, to watch.
I was cheering for the Saints, but as you know, because we've talked about it 1,000 times, I'm not. I don't consider myself, quote, a Saints fan, end quote. So, I mean, I was, you know, it is what it is. I normally would continue to watch. Watching New England win another Super Bowl to me is, and I can admire them and say, hey, you know, wow, they are a dynastic team. They are the greatest quarterback of all time, the greatest head coach perhaps of all time, blah, blah, blah. I can do all that and at the same time go, it's boring. Probably the only way that I will get involved in a game emotionally at all this weekend is if you get into the fourth quarter Sunday and Jacksonville is ahead. If that happened, I could probably see myself, for the sheer fun of it, hopping on the Jaguars bandwagon for a few minutes, just for fun. But other than that, I mean, I don't care. And I bet you that is – That's a pervasive thought.
Yeah, ratings are not going to be great.
I feel cheated.
Weekend.
I mean, I really believed it. I believed we were going to get an epic Super Bowl with epic quarterbacks, epic coaches. I thought we were going to get a really good Super Bowl, and I'm kind of let down from just a – I was looking forward to – I wrote, I feel cheated.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. We'll get to it in a minute. Yeah. As I tease this, before we go into something else for a second, it was numbness at the very beginning, and then...
I was going to say, let's just go here, and then we'll come back. We'll get to basketball in a minute. No, the people, they're wanting to hear...
Well, I was taking a break, actually. I was not necessarily talking basketball, but...
Okay.
Yeah, we'll go here in a second. But it was numbness at the beginning, and then it kind of went into the worst phases of the emotional scale after that. So we'll talk about that in 1 second. Before we do that, I'll tell you, the podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing in Oxford. And ask about the float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704. JLOWE at CommunityMTG.com.
Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. But did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in the commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero challenges you to give him a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give him a shot, go to Google. Read Romero Miller State Farm reviews. And then if you have insurance needs in Tennessee or Mississippi, give Romero Miller State Farm a call, 662-893-1212. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee. For Oxford Exxon podcast listeners, that's a $500 savings. So call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando at 662-342-7700 or in Oxford at 662-281-8800.
So I'll set this up a little bit. I was out of town, and I was trying to decide even where to watch it. I couldn't make up my mind. Do you go to a bar? Do you go to a restaurant? Do you just try to sit by yourself? And I'm a very fidgety watcher. I'm nervous. I'm not steel. I kind of like changing channels and moving around. And I don't do well, for the most part, in bars watching the Saints play. The exception was last week against Carolina. But even there, I left like late third quarter because I knew as it got close late, I was going to be kind of weird in the bar. So I came back home. And this time I said, no, I'm just going to sit in the hotel room. I'm going to sit in the hotel room. That way I can hear, I can listen. I don't have to worry about sounds and noise and whatever, and I'm just going to do that. And there was disappointment, but because of the way they started and how bad they started, I never really got invested. They're down 17-0. They have the stupid pick when the Vikings defensive lineman just throws his hand up looking the other way. It goes to the linebacker, whoever it was, runs it back. And I go, okay, just not your day. But emotionally, not bad. And then as soon as they score the first touchdown, it goes 17-7, I guess, is how they scored first.
Yeah, about a minute and a half to go in the third.
And I kept getting texts going, hey, it's got a shot here. And I said, no, I'm not getting invested. Not yet. I said, it's got to get to 17-14 with the ball for me to get invested.
That happened pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I mean, mid-fourth, we were all in. And it got done, and I had so many different emotions, but one of my main ones was just pissed off they even got back in. And I thought, you know, there was so much ease. It would have been so easy there to just go peacefully and let it go. And instead, I'm going to have the moment that, from a sports standpoint, I probably remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
it's really funny. I had a foreshadowing moment. So I watched the beginning of the game on a plane. My flight from Chicago to Memphis was delayed. And I watched the first quarter and a half in the air. I saw the pick that you referenced walking through the concourse in Memphis. Got our bags, which in Memphis takes an hour because the airport's a complete disaster. Just a total disaster. Another topic for another day. Got our bags, got to our car. Paid the parking fee and got out on the road and found the Saints broadcast on XM radio. And they were starting the third quarter. And so I listened to the third quarter, and the Saints put that big drive together, and 17-7. And I kind of had a feeling right there. I thought, okay, well, here we go. Our boy Case Keenum's going to get tight.
He
throws a pick. Saints score the second touchdown while we're filling up the car in Holly Springs. I get back to the house. It was 20-14 Vikings when we got back. Saints score, and you know, when the Saints were setting up for the field goal, they had that third and one at around the 25. And I remember thinking to myself, this is a big play. Because if you get the first down, you absolutely can make your kick the last play of the game and let it be what it is. And they didn't get the first down. Minnesota calls the timeout. They kick the field goal, make it a 2-point or 1-point game with 25 seconds left. And I can just remember a thought in my mind of, that's a lot of time. Thinking, that's so stupid.
I mean, it is, but it isn't a lot of time, though. You know what I mean? It still takes a fluke, though, with 25 seconds.
And it did, and it gets to 10 seconds. And at that point, you think, they've got it.
Well, okay, a few things. First, no, you're right. I was frustrated by the play call because Minnesota is so good up the middle with run defense. They've stacked the box. They handed, I guess, Kamara. And yeah. I thought, you know, you've got Breeze. Just get something out on the edge on a throw. You can still complete it, make Minnesota burn that timeout. It's not automatically incomplete or giving them the extra timeout back. Yeah, like you said, try to get that 1 yard. Try to get there to run the clock out. Because it was just that, it's that voice in the back of your head that you don't necessarily believe that 25 seconds, but hey, if we can avoid that part of it, let's go ahead and do that, run this thing down, you know, do the kick, whatever. Because I frankly felt pretty confident once the Saints got it back with like a 130 left and a timeout. I thought, okay, we can get out of field goal range. Got a shot here. It's okay. I mean, I was really happy at that point after we had screwed up and let Minnesota get down there and take the lead, but Minnesota gave us such a favor because they kept throwing the ball. They let the time stay on the clock even once they were in field goal range. And so I'm watching it, and I'm kind of like you. I'm thinking, well, not great from a time standpoint, but okay. And then the last play, more just disbelief. Like I think I, like, wasn't a moan or a – it was just kind of a sound that I let out. And then I just kind of stared at the TV, and I thought, that's that moment. It's the one that I'm going to see the rest of my life.
You could see happening in high school. You can see it happening in the college game.
Yeah.
But it's not a play you expect an NFL DB to make.
Yeah, the Williams kid, the rookie, terrible play on his standpoint because if he just wraps him up, the clock continues to run, game's over.
Game's over.
And then also, Dennis Allen, they're running cover two right there and covering the middle. Run quarters, push everything back to the middle, and just make a play. It was a terrible play call
That's what I was thinking. You know, 10 seconds, they'd have no timeouts. They're 69 yards from the end zone. They're 25 yards from anything resembling field goal range, give them the middle of the field. They're not going to have enough time to come clock the ball.
No. Game is over after that play if it's inbounds.
Yes. Game's completely over, and I don't say this to rub salt in it. This isn't directed at you. I think if I'm a Saints fan, what makes it even worse is if you watched Philly and Atlanta, and I didn't see all of it, but I saw enough of it. Nick Foles' Eagles are just surviving on fumes.
Yeah, no, what you're saying is exactly right, because look, this is not about the Saints, but sports fans in general. We've all had the terrible losses, the gut punches, and those type of things, and I was kind of playing it through my past on fandom, what's bugged me before. You know, and the first one I ever had, and it's just because you're a kid and you don't think there's a tomorrow and every day is the end of the world, was the Game 7 of the 91 World Series, Twins-Braves. And then, you know, I got a lot of texts from people going, yeah, you know, it's 4th and 25, similar. And it is similar. It's a walk-off, though, and you know you're playing for a title. That's what I told, because somebody said, well, it was a lot like losing to the 49ers 37-32 or whatever it was that year when Vernon Davis went crazy. And I said, well, yeah, but that was a pretty good Giants team that they had to beat the next week. I just thought it was done. I mean, as they lined up for that last play, in my head, as cynical as I typically am as a Saints fan, I went, they're going to go win next week. And as you said, we're going to get Brady, Breeze, Peyton, Belichick in a really, really fun 2 weeks.
In a dome. It was going to be
– yeah.
I always think about, like, sometimes, what the hell are we going to talk about? And I was thinking to myself, after Lutz made the field goal, man, we're going to have 2 weeks – of being able to talk about a Super Bowl that the majority of our listeners are going to be quasi-invested in. Because the Saints, of all the teams left, the Saints were the team that had a chance to outscore New England. I mean, the second half the other day, that Minnesota defense is really good. The second half the other day, Drew Brees lit that defense on fire. And I thought, we're going to get this epic Super Bowl in a dome, Brady, Brees, two guys that have sort of defied age, Belichick, Peyton, because Peyton is every bit as obnoxious as Belichick, just in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is going to be really cool. This is going to be... It's down here. There's a lot of Saints fans down here in our listening audience. You've got a chance, I mean, a real chance. I mean, to me, Saints-Patriots is a coin toss. And I thought, this is going to be awesome. And then when it went away, I was like, holy hell. I don't know how to describe it. I could not believe the play call. And I couldn't believe when he – I was watching it, and I'm sure for you it happened in slow motion. I saw him dive, and I thought, I had enough time to think, what in the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
And just, oh, I don't know. Just.
It's got to be what, frankly, it's being serious here. Because of now look, Philadelphia, maybe they beat Minnesota. I don't know what happens next week. But feeling like they were going to win the game, I mean, the comparisons that when I look at this and make them is, you know, Rangers one strike away from the World Series title, Bill Buckner. I mean, this is that category in my head. That kind of stuff.
It the only thing I can relate it to from a feeling standpoint about what was coming, and I know what people mean about 4th and 25, but that Ole Miss team at 4th and 25 still had to go win games. A committee was still going to have to put them in. There was no guarantee at all. And if a committee had left that Ole Miss team out of the playoff, no one could have really argued. Because they did go to Memphis and get their ass kicked. So that's where that comparison falls flat.
Yeah, I think the comparison is mostly for the West than even the playoff. But either way, yeah, I get what you're saying.
for me, it reminded me of what always reminds me of it. It was 2003 Cubs, where I remember, you know, that night thinking, well, not only are we going to win the pennant, but we're better than both of those teams in the American League. Whoever wins this series is going to beat the Yankees. And so when the Bartman thing happened and all of that, and they ended up losing, it was opportunity lost. And then, and I've seen people reference this, Drew Brees is 30, turned 39 yesterday.
Yeah, free agent.
He's a free agent. There's no guarantee that, yeah, they're a good young team. They've drafted well. Kamara, Williams,
Lattimore.
I mean, they're good. It's all there.
Mike Thomas.
But you never know. And Philadelphia is going to get Carson Wentz back. Jared Goff and the Rams are going to be better next season. Atlanta's still there.
Oh, yeah, you can't. I mean, opportunities have to be seized in the NFL.
Yes, because you never know when the window is going to shift on you.
Had a chance to play Nick Foles in an NFC title game.
Yeah, it was going to be the Saints were going to go win that game in Philadelphia. I mean, everybody goes, well, the weather and the crowd and what, blah, blah, blah. None of that. It might not have been a beautiful win, but the Saints were going to win the game. It's to me, if I'm a Saints fan, that's far more haunting than any other of the playoff losses that people reference. You know, when they lost to Seattle, yeah, but that wasn't a Super Bowl guarantee team. When they lost in San Francisco, yeah, like you said, the Giants were really good.
I mean, now they would have played New York back in the Dome the next week after they kicked the crap out of them in the regular season, but still, I see what you're saying.
But still, that was a Giants team that, for whatever reason, in those two playoff runs, playing on the road did not intimidate them. So you just never know. This was the one that felt like the sure thing. It felt like the real missed opportunity.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, anything other than Brees winning another title is going to haunt me for a literally long time. You know what I mean? Like, if they come back next year and happen to roll through and win it, then okay, whatever. But otherwise, no, this one's tough. I mean, this is window... at least the window modifying soon and having a chance with that exact window. And it's, I mean, he's 39. He's lost some arm strength as evidenced by that pick early in the game. It's not foolproof by any point moving forward.
And when people say, what do you mean about Peyton being obnoxious? After the Lutz field goal, it's now been, they caught it on camera. It's a Star Tribune story today that has the photos of Sean Peyton doing the skull chant,
yeah,
with clap above his head. Just shows people, you, someone like me, as superstitious and as out, you couldn't pay me enough money to do something like that with time left on the clock.
Yeah, 1 second and 100 yards. Nope.
Not doing it. I wouldn't do it after the damn game.
No, I know.
You know, it was going to – like I said, I wrote this in 10 thoughts. I just feel cheated. I really do. That's the only word that comes over. I was so excited. There's so many compelling storylines to Saints-Patriots that they're all gone now. And I hate it. I tweeted, I'm so glad I'm not a Saints fan because I would not be able to get over that forever. I mean, I had a similar – we'll talk about the Cubs convention in a minute. But I hate that part of it because for the next 2.5 weeks, I'm really disinterested. And I know I'm supposed to be interested and I need to watch because we have to talk about stuff. But I'm not particularly interested.
Yeah, two things. One, I completely get it. I mean, as much crap as I give everybody else, I 100% understand why the Saints are hated. I get it. It's fine. It's that, like I told you, it's that deal where if he coached the Falcons, I would hate no one in my life more. I mean, I might have a voodoo doll of Sean Payton if he coached the Falcons. It would drive me insane constantly. The second thing, getting over it's funny because, like I said, I was so numb the night it happened. I was really kind of just whatever. And then the next morning, I woke up like I had the flu or something. The next morning is when it was like, you know, had they just held on, I would have gotten up and read all these newspapers and really had a really good morning. And instead, I just basically had to stay off Twitter because every time I open Twitter, it's the headlines. It's the stupid video from the dude on the field. It's all this stuff. And I said, I've got to get off media for 4 or 5 hours here. I'm going to drive myself crazy.
And, oh, yeah. You can't watch.
No, nothing. I mean,
I will give Williams credit. And this is a sports writing thing. It would have been so easy for him to go hide in a training room. And make no mistake, the Saints would have let him. And for him to stand there and take those questions and to be accountable, that was impressive. And he's a guy that now, moving forward, I will cheer for him. I hope there's vindication somewhere down the road, and I hope it comes soon. But, man. Just
every year, quarterback league, quarterback league, quarterback league, Foles against Keenum.
It is Foles against Keenum, but Foles didn't get him there. Wentz got him.
Of course. Yeah.
Keenum got him there.
He did.
Keenum played okay the other night.
I tweeted this really early. He played fine. He's above average. He's not elite. He's not great. He doesn't make mistakes, and he's a better Trent Dilfer. He's doing nothing to beat you, and that's all you got to do right now. It's fine. He had that one really dumb pass, and it almost cost him. But anyway, they pulled it out. They had a horseshoe. The announcers, though, early in this game, and I don't think I'm being biased here because I was kind of just watching. They were treating him like a child. Every time he threw any pass, it got overly praised, like he had to have some sort of vindication about him. It was weird to me.
And you're right.
You weren't watching, but it was. No, well, I guess you were. Yeah, yeah, it was weird. He throws a swing pass on like second and eight, and it just goes raving for 10, 12 seconds about it. I'm like, he's an NFL quarterback. What are we doing right here? I don't know. It was really odd to me the way the announcers kind of went into it, almost sort of trying to like prop him up and convince the viewers that we've got this Breeze Keenum battle going on.
When yeah, no.
The game was Breeze against the Vikings. Yeah, I do too. It was Breeze against Vikings, and I mean, look, the last play is the reason they lost the game. Because I hate when people go, well, you know, you can't blame that one play. Well, yeah, I can. However, in saying that, getting down 17-0 was so poor on the Saints' part that never should have happened, and none of it ever should have actually mattered.
Yeah, the Saints' first quarter, if they have an average first quarter, they win the game running away. But they didn't, and I don't know. Like I said, I hate it because I normally enjoy the NFL, and so in the playoffs, I love playoff football. And
I couldn't decide Saturday afternoon whether I was pulling for Falcons or Eagles. Thank God that ended how it did. Thank God. Because I was texting during that game, and I'm going, I don't know who I'm pulling for back here because I really think we might win tomorrow, and then it's back in the dome, and it's all this, as bad as that week would have been for my mental health. And then as it got late there and the Falcons are driving, I went, no, I can't do it. Go Eagles. Please, God. just I don't care. We'll go to Philadelphia. I'll deal with it. Just please win the game. And then the ball slips through Julio's hands or whatever. And I went, oh, okay. And then a day later, I kind of chuckled. Somebody sent me a text. They were like, well, at least the Falcons have lost. And I went, you know, there's a silver lining there because they would have been back in the Super Bowl. There's no doubt in my mind. So.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah. Anyway. It is what it is. I'll at some point probably get over it, but I will not be watching football next weekend. I have no desire whatsoever to check that out, especially the NFC game. I could get invested in the AFC one if it works out a certain way. But nonetheless,
yeah, if Jacksonville stays in it, I will get invested.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. They've got the Sildenafil. It is that $10 alternative to the $50 or $60 little blue pill. Same length of effectiveness as the other guys. Gets you ready in as little as 15 minutes. 662-252-2321 or right there at Tyson Drugs where you can fill out the form, tell the pharmacy who your doctor is, look at the prescription ready, and they'll deliver it to you if you're not local. Again, 662-252-2321.
Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. All the 2018s are there. You get great deals on 2017s, obviously. Now, all the previously owned vehicles you could be looking for, if they don't have them, Gene and Sandy will find them for you. Great lease deals as well. 1990s prices on a new car on a lease deal there at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. I've referenced my 10 weekend thoughts a couple of times. They're up on the site, published them on Monday as opposed to usually on Sunday because of travel reasons. They are brought to you, as always, by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his sites, harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab up at the top left. Filter through by what you're looking for, and then send Harry an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Ole Miss is at Texas A&M tonight. The game is at 8. It is being televised on the SEC network.
Speaking of, Ole Miss holds serve at home against Florida. Nice win in an SEC that's not no elite teams, but everybody pretty good. So everybody kind of helps RPI to some extent. Yeah. They've got to win road games to make this anything more than just kind of a okay season.
Yes.
But nonetheless, small victory-wise, it was a pretty good day for them on Saturday.
It was a good day. Yeah, they won the game, got a top 50 RPI win. Don't have to listen to a lot of the Mike for Andy. He doesn't have to listen to a lot of the Mike White stuff now. Mike was, from what I can, I wasn't there obviously, but from what I can gather, could not have been more gracious in defeat, which is not a surprise. Mike's a great guy. It's a good win. Like you said, they have to hold court at home, and they did. They have so far. They're 3-2 in the league. They've won three home games. They have lost two road games. They have two big road opportunities, two top 50 RPI road games tonight, and then again on Saturday when they go to Arkansas. They've got to win one of these two games. At some point, you've got to break through on the road. They probably have to break through on the road two or three times for this thing to get interesting. I've referenced this on numerous occasions. They have, I think, three top 100 wins right now. All are not bad losses. Now, you're not going to get in the tournament for accumulating bad, good losses. You've got to win games. They have nothing but opportunities ahead of them. They still have a trip to Texas. Texas is a borderline top 25 RPI team. It's a road game. Every team left on their schedule is in the top 100 in RPI. So the ability to accumulate wins and get into the tournament conversation is there, but they're going to have to win on the road. They're going to have to shoot the ball better. The good thing for them on the court the other day was twofold. One, Terrence Davis did not take his offense on the defense. He actually played very well on the defensive side of the court. And then Bruce Stevens was very good. And Ole Miss needs Bruce Stevens to be very good. He's getting better defensively, which is imperative because early in the season he was just atrocious on defense. He's getting better. He is a skilled offensive player. He knocks some threes down. He can score in the paint. He's active on the glass. This team needs people active on the glass. They're, I think, 13th or 14th in the league in rebounding margin. They're not turning it over. They're pretty good in their turnover margin. They've got a chance is what I'm saying. Andy said this weeks ago, to his credit, this team has a path. It's a narrow path. It doesn't have – there are no shoulders. There's no place to pull over. It is a narrow path. You have to navigate very precisely, but there is a path. And if they were to win tonight, and A&M's 0-5 in the league, if they were to win tonight, Saturday would be absolutely freaking fascinating. Because if they can win a couple of games on the road here in the next couple weeks, they can kind of erase some of what happened in the non-league and make this thing pretty intriguing going forward. Because if they could somehow get to 11-7 in the SEC, they're going to have an argument. How compelling of an argument, I don't know, but an argument. And anything above 11-7 in the league, Chase, they've got a real shot.
A&M getting any of those people back that's been hurt or sick or whatever the last few weeks?
I'm not sure.
Okay. They played Kentucky well the other day, although this Kentucky group is incredibly misjointed themselves, so I don't know what to make of that necessarily.
They did play Kentucky well. I thought they should have won the game.
Right.
It got away from them at the end, but it's to the point you made a minute ago. There's no great team in the league. Now, there's no crappy team in the league. There's no garbage team. None. But there's no great team. And everybody, with the exception of Mississippi State, scheduled really well. Really well. Like Missouri scheduled off the chains. Florida scheduled great. There's a team scheduled really well. And so RPI is going to be strong. They're going to get seven teams into the tournament.
Think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I think they get seven. I mean, if you told me they got eight, I'm not shocked.
I'll go there.
Scheduled well. Alabama scheduled really well.
Tennessee, even though nobody really thought they'd be very good, has scheduled pretty well.
Tennessee scheduled great. I mean, I had it up a little while ago. They're a top 30 RPI team right now. My point is there's lots of opportunities. Now, you got to win games. We've had this discussion year after year, but unlike in years past where there was only going to be a couple of opportunities to make up for mistakes early in the season, that is not the case for this team or any other SEC team right now. There's two opportunities a week.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. So we'll see. What time's that game tonight?
8:00, SEC Network.
Late. 8:00 for Rebels and Aggies again, as you said. Pretty late one, pretty important one. A&M still trying to get that first road win. I mean, first win period in the league. You got to think. If you're them, your RPI is still really good, but you got to be going, oh, my God, because, I mean, they're about to put themselves in a heck of a mess when I thought they might have been the best team in the league there at one point early in the non-conference.
I mean, 0-5. I mean, yeah, their RPI is really good, but, I mean, are you going to get in at 8-10 in the league?
Yeah.
Is that going to get you into the NCAA tournament?
No.
I mean, it you know.
No.
There's always that Big Ten teams have done it with sub 500 league records, but –
No, so ever, hard to do.
The SEC's never gotten that benefit of the doubt.
No. Well, the SEC's still not getting a lot of benefit of the doubt, frankly.
Well, there is, when it comes to basketball, and I think it is simply SEC fatigue this time of the year, every year, there's just no benefit of the doubt for the SEC at all from the national
I think it was Seth Davis who got on Twitter a couple days ago and was basically talking about how the league wasn't any better, even though there were better good teams. And it's like, well, isn't that the definition of the – okay. All right, Seth. Thanks.
Yeah, he doesn't like the SEC. They're tired of it after all the football stuff. And this year, the national championship was an all-SEC affair.
Well, I mean, in the last 12 months, there have been a football, a women's basketball, and a baseball all-SEC national championship.
Yeah.
And in the last 12 months.
The people that live in the Northeast are sick of it.
Yeah.
However, the computers don't have that bias. And
no,
the computers love this SEC basketball group. They love them.
Yeah.
And typically, when that committee sits together in Indianapolis in March, they let the computers make decisions for them.
Are they still using a traditional RPI formula, or did that change? I couldn't remember what they were doing.
They've changed it somewhat. They've made it where road wins are even bigger.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that's why for Ole Miss, man, breaking through on the road two or three times is going to make this thing interesting. Now, if they don't, there's no chance in hell. It's not even remotely intriguing.
Yeah,
they've got to win plural, not just one game. They've got to win several road games. But if they do, it's their RPI is going to jump, and it's going to get interesting.
Podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. Get those free quotes from MasterCuts by calling 662-607-7773 or visiting MasterCutsLawn.com. Remember, when you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast, and when the time comes, your first cut will be free. They'll build outdoor living areas for you, and even saw yesterday, if you're having some issue with the snow, they'll come salt your driveways, salt your sidewalks, get those workable for you. So again, MasterCutsLawn.com, 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. Oxford University Bank gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide. OUB offers all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
So tell me about Chicago.
It was cool. I'd never been to the convention before. I had some sort of reservations about it. I thought it would be a cool Christmas gift for Carson. Turns out I was right. He had a great time. On Thursday night, the convention started on Friday. On Thursday night, he and I were going out to dinner, and on our way out of the hotel, we saw Ron Coomer, the former Cub and Minnesota Twin third baseman. He's the color analyst on the Cubs radio broadcast, and Carson loves listening to the Cubs on the radio. It's one of those things. He likes it. And so I said, there's Ron Coomer. And he walked right up to him and introduced himself and told him how much he enjoyed listening to the broadcast. And Coomer obviously could hear in his voice that he wasn't from the Midwest. And he said, where are you from? And Carson said, Oxford, Mississippi. And, Coomer got a big kick out of that. And anyway, we didn't ask him for an autograph or a picture or anything. Just said, it was great to meet you. And these other people came up to him to get autographs and stuff. And we're walking out the door and Ron Coomer yells, Carson, Carson. And I turned and looked and he goes, you want to put on my World Series ring? And Carson was like, yeah. And he went over there. And so Carson got to wear the ring for a couple of minutes. And we took pictures and he talked to him some more. And I wrote this yesterday. We could have left right there. The weekend would have been a complete success. But the way it works is I paid for it and registered for it back in August. But you don't get your pass until Friday afternoon. So we got our pass and stuff. And each person gets a voucher. I had no idea how this worked, but the voucher could be anything from like a meet and greet with one of the elite players to $5 off a purchase of $50 or more from the Cub store. And we got one of those. And then Carson got the premier autograph session. It was guaranteed with Chris Bryant. And so we immediately went and got this print of Bryant on the final out of the World Series in 2016 and got it autographed. And Bryant couldn't have been nicer to Carson than he was. And a year ago, I've told you about this before. He had a ball thrown to him in the stands in Baltimore back in July. And Eddie Butler threw it to him. And he's cherished the ball ever since, just a BP ball. And so he took it with him to Chicago just in case he would see Eddie Butler, and as luck would have it, they did a lot of kids only stuff, which was really cool. They had a kids only line where they would bring some of the lesser players, Tommy La Stella and people like that. And so Carson's like probably the most motivated person in the whole hotel to get an Eddie Butler autograph. So right after we got the Chris Bryant autograph, we get in the line for Eddie Butler, and he gets up to him and he tells him the story of the ball. And Eddie Butler kind of looked over at me and I shook my head like, yep, it's all true. And so he just engages him in conversation. It was really cool. He got to really talk to him for a couple of minutes. And of course, Eddie signed the ball. And we went to this thing where Theo Epstein was there. And they have microphones set up throughout the ballroom where fans can go get in line and ask a question or whatever. And some of the fans that were asking questions were clearly like auditioning for a job, and which was annoying as hell. And then you'd get a lot of them with someone going, hey, can I get your autograph? And they were like, they'd already said no autographs in these things. Carson gets to the mic and he says, when can I get my Bryce Harper jersey?
Oh God.
I know. And I just put my head down and the whole place is laughing. And all these Cubs writers that I follow are like, some kid just asked Theo about Bryce Harper. When can he get his jersey? And I retweeted a couple of them with, yeah, that was my kid. Anyway, he had a great time. He got to batting practice from, he got to go up to this room where they had for batting practice for kids. And, Brian McCray, who used to play for the Cubs, Mets, a couple other teams, was the guy that was kind of giving tips or whatever. And so he got to take a few swings off of, a guy throwing some pitches to him, and Brian McCray gave him some pointers, and it was really cool. It was really well done. The only thing that kind of creepy about it was the memorabilia people.
Yeah.
Who are those people, man? And I mean, they are what they are. They're just weird. Some of those people had bought 20 passes to the convention just for the voucher system. And literally, we find out we had the Chris Bryant voucher. This guy immediately offered us $400 for it. And I mean, Carson wasn't going to sell it because he was so excited to meet Chris Bryant. But it was just, kind of bizarre. The whole thing was just, it was just weird. The people that collect all that stuff and they're chasing these people down in the hotel, and that was the weird part. The cool part was to see all of the kids that were there. That was like they had a kids only press conference, and Anthony Rizzo was the moderator of it, and that was really funny. I mean, that was like one of the highlights. I mean, he couldn't have been kind of more charming. And Chris Bryant was in it, and Javi Baez, and I can't remember who else. Maybe Wilson Contreras, a couple people like that. But it was really well done. They had a deal with some of the pitchers were on this panel, and I wrote about this. It was one of the most. Someone said, "Who's the one guy you most want to strike out?" And all four of them. It was Kyle Hendricks, C.J. Edwards, Tyler Chatwood, who they just signed from the Rockies, and Steve Cishek, who they just signed, I guess, from the Mariners. And all four of them almost instantly said Votto. Apparently, for a major league pitcher, striking out Joey Votto is the holy grail. They're all in total awe of Joey Votto, the hitter. You can't fool him. No sequencing works. They're terrified of him. It was bizarre. I was like impressed because, most major leaguers, you have to be, as we've always talked about, you have to be the very best player of all the very best players to ever get to the major leagues. So all these guys are throwing balls in major league uniforms. They're all really, really, really good pitchers. Total intimidation of Joey Votto. Just like, who's the one guy you would least like to hit? They're all like, I don't want to hit Votto. I don't want to do anything to make him mad. Total fear of Joey Votto. That struck me. But it was really well done. It was fun. If we do it again, and we probably will, the only thing different will be now that I know that it's all encompassed in the hotel, and he's smart enough to figure out how to get to places, I would set him loose on the autograph hunts, and then I would go listen to more of the forums. because I stood in a lot of lines with them for, like, you know, an autograph from Justin Grimm, for example.
Nothing against Justin, but
yeah, nothing against Justin Grimm, but you know, I mean, it's fine. It's just me standing in an autograph line. Me standing in an autograph line for Rob Zastrzyzny was, you know, I probably would have enjoyed listening to some of the forums more. But I was going to say the one thing that told me that. So as we sort of wrap this up, you might one day get over the Saints deal. I went to a forum. It was late Saturday afternoon. It's kind of the last thing we did Saturday. It was Andre Dawson, Derek Lee, Carlos Zambrano, and Juan Pierre. And I looked up at the thing and I was thinking to myself, there's Derek Lee. He hit a double in the eighth inning of that game, the Bartman game. There's Andre Dawson. He was working for the Marlins at the time. There's Juan Pierre, who was the guy that, with one out in the eighth, hit the double down the left field line that got the whole damn thing started. And they're all sitting up there wearing Cubs jerseys. And I was like, you know, before 2016, I would have looked up at all those guys and right now felt this little thing in the pit of my stomach. And I thought Saturday afternoon, I thought, I'm finally over it. I hold no grudges against any of them. In fact, I really like Derek Lee. You know, it was like that kind of thought in my mind. So 13, 14 years from now, Chase, if the Saints have won a Super Bowl, you'll get past it.
Yeah. 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 No, it's cool to me what the Cubs thing, and maybe every team, I don't know who does what, but the players engaging and being very receptive to the fans and the kids is what's cool about it to me, that it's not a basically not a hindrance on their time, considering it's the off season in a few days when they typically wouldn't be doing much of anything. So
no, they all seemed really kind of happy to be there. It was really well done. They, but especially with kids, and that, and man, listen, if you're in sports these days, it's about the kids. You better win the kids. But they really did. They did a lot. They had a lot of stuff that was just for kids. There was always an autograph line that was just for kids.
Yeah.
They did a lot of cool stuff that was just for kids. Like, you know, and there was a room, you know, because the Cubs train in Arizona, there was a room where, you know, you could go get information about spring training and stuff, but they had virtual reality rooms. Carson got to, you know, quote, ride a mountain bike in the Grand Canyon. They had a lot of stuff that was really kid friendly. It was impressive. I mean, there was if you're running a sports organization, college or pro, there probably were some things you could learn from that. It was you're right. It was great for kids. There were a lot of kids that were there that, because I thought, you know, kids are going to get bored just sitting here listening to people talk, and they would have. But they made it fun. Like that kids press conference was all kids. You had to be a kid to ask a question. A lot of the questions were really funny, and Rizzo and those guys were really engaged in it, and it was well done. So for kids, I mean, they cemented fandom of a lot of little kids. And even in that deal, like when it was over, like, you know, normally it was no autographs. Those guys stood there and autographed for kids for quite a while. I mean, it was cool, you know. I mean, you could tell that guys like Rizzo and Bryant and Contreras and Zobrist, those guys get it. Those events should be about the kids. If you could get the memorabilia people the hell out of the hotel, it would have been awesome.
No doubt. So we will wrap today's show there. Be back tomorrow. Maybe we can even, you know, get out of the house and actually resume some sort of normal function. We'll see as the day goes on.
I don't know, man. The roads in Oxford, apparently, from following on Twitter, are pretty bad. And the high today is 21.
Yeah, I know. And there's actually starting to be a little bit of accumulation outside my window as I look right now. Not much. We're not going to get 5 inches or anything crazy. Probably aren't even going to get an inch. But there is some semblance of a dusting accumulating on the grass in addition to the roads and the drivers. We'll update you on the board as anything goes on today, and then in some way or another, podcast tomorrow. Talk to you then.